Welcome to Experts at EWU. I'm Kent Adams, and I'm kind of excited about today's guest because I'm a little bit of a history buff, not because of my age, don't go there, people, but I love history. I remember sitting at the bottom of my grandfather's chair in the Ottoman, remember listening to the stories of the cavalry and everything else. And in those days, we did not have tape recorders for home use like we do today, and all the electronics and so forth. And how I wish I could capture some of that. Well, I've got somebody here who's been around almost as long as I have and has been teaching for 49 years at EWU. And you're going for 60, right?
I'm going for 60, okay. Yes.
And that person is Bill Youngs. And Bill is history buff number one in my life because you've lived it, you've taught it, you still enjoy you. We were talking about before we went on about memorizing certain things that were a part of history and so forth, and to be able to do that. And you still love the interchange with students, don't you?
I certainly do.
This last year's been tough though, hasn't it?
Yeah, though I've always, for the last decade, I've had at least one online course.
Okay.
And what we call asynchronous. It's not actually, you don't see the students, but I teach national parks. And so I've been able to be in Yosemite or Yellowstone and actually do a film and then present it to the students. And so I've loved that capability, yeah, of the online course.
But I love Yosemite. It's such a beautiful spot. Has such a rich history with the Indians there and everything else. I just love it. And I want to see that, whatever video you've got, okay?
Okay,
just personally, it's just would be good to see. You've been an author, a scholar, a professor of history, especially U.S. history?
Yes.
Yes. And you've been, I think, also a role model for those students who have come through, because I've gathered just from talking to you before we went on, you just love history and you impale that on them, don't you?
I try to, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about what students were like 30, 40 years ago, because my interpretation is they're different today. Are they still interested in U.S. history?
Yes, they are. And, you know, it's a question I've had since I was, say, at Eastern for 10 years. Are they different than 10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
And I have trouble with that. I find that the things I liked about students in the 1970s, I like about them today. I mean, there are quite a few that are enthusiastic about history, enthusiastic about
And they make your day, don't they?
Well, they sure do, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an interactive process. And
right. You're nearing your 50th anniversary of teaching history and loving history. And you and I talked about, I wish I had listened to my grandfather more, and I wish I had paid more attention to the history books as I was reading them and so forth. But sometimes it takes a while, like you have to get in your 70s before you can maybe really start to appreciate the history. I see sometimes these days that history is getting discounted or needs to be changed or whatever. And history is history. Unless you have it wrong, it's history. Not everything was done correctly, as maybe especially by today's standards and so forth. As you come to 50 years here, what do you look back on that really engaged you in that 50-year journey?
I'm going to give you an answer that may not be quite what you're looking for.
Okay.
And you're the boss, and you.
No. This is a conversation.
But one of the things I find fascinating about teaching history as I get older, there's more of it that I've lived through.
Yes.
I was doing calculation recently, and I've been on this planet for half the time since the beginning of the Civil War, and a third of the time since the beginning of the American Revolution. Now, I don't have personal stories of Civil War.
Right.
But one of the ones that is a good example of this is back in the day, and must have been the late 60s, I actually saw Martin Luther King give a speech, and I was close enough to him that I could see the sweat on his brow.
Wow.
And that was just an amazing experience.
You never forget things like that, do you?
No, you don't. And And when I tell the students this story, instead of being the 30-second version we're doing now, it'll take half an hour or so, and you can hear a pin drop. Yeah. And you just increasingly, as we get further from the time of King, but people still know of him, right. And they think, here's a guy that actually saw Martin Luther King.
Yes,
and,
yes.
It's fun to be able to have more and more things that have happened in my lifetime that I can comment on. As I say, I can't go back to the Civil War, but that's right. One of the charms of teaching history over a long period of time, and one of the things that's grown increasingly interesting going forward.
Well, I had, I wasn't there for either of those. I wasn't there for the Revolutionary War or the signing of the Declaration, but I did have an Adams there in the signing of the Declaration.
Oh, yes, okay? Indeed. Okay, yes, indeed.
And I have a table at home that was in the Quincy White House.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it was in the personal part of the house, uh-huh. White House and so forth. But so I, you know, my son even, who never liked history and so forth, has delved into all kinds of, you know, the chain of our family and things like that. And that, I think, tends to, if you can live it through family or live it through somebody who was there with Martin Luther King, very few of us were. Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll never get that chance. Yes, there's video and all of that, but to hear that and to hear, you know, that you listened to him and could get the cadence of his speech and so forth. What an opportunity.
Well, it was indeed an amazing experience. It's one thing to read about it, but one thing I remember is that a feeling of, I like to tell people, there were 10,000 of us. We weren't standing, and I was right at the front, but we weren't standing there. We were floating about 4 feet off the ground. I mean, yeah. It was just a powerful, biblical, wow. Spiritual experience.
And you don't see that in the video or the newsreels compared to being there.
Yeah.
And it really experiencing that. I'm going to bet that you knew where you were the day that John Kennedy was shot.
Yes.
And all of that.
You don't forget that.
Yeah. And I think for my generation, that was a real turning point that we had not, no one kills a president. I mean, yes, you read about it in the history and all of that, but that was then to have that happen and so forth. And some of the things since then, mm-hmm. We're living in history right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes it's something that can be tragic. As a teacher, you can say, hey, this is great, I can use this.
Yeah.
Case in point, COVID. I'm teaching right now a capstone seminar where the students write their senior big paper in history, and the topic is disease in history. And a couple of years ago, if I'd mentioned things like wearing masks or
what are you talking about?
What are you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah.
But now we're just, you know, there are all sorts of parallels to epidemics going back hundreds of years.
Yes.
Things like quarantines, are, right. They've been around a long time.
What are some of the lessons that we have learned over the last few decades that we should take with us for a while that are important history moments that we may not think of on a daily basis, but really have an impact on where we are and going as a country?
Well, that's a profound question, sir. I wish you were a student and I could say, look it up or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, thanks. Don't have time to do that,
okay,
professor.
All right. All right, I'll do my best.
Okay.
Well, I mean, obviously the things in terms of memorable things that have changed stuff, 9/11 is kind of hard to beat on.
Yes.
That. I mean, so much policy changed and a couple of wars probably arguably grew out of it.
Yes.
In terms of more subtle changes, I think it's, I'm an optimist when I look at history.
Good.
And you'll hear people say, civil rights movement didn't do anything. We're no better off than we were 50 years ago. Well, look at history. I think it's amazing the degree to which I think this is a much more fair and egalitarian society than it ever was. And some of those changes come very slowly. Something,
and so sometimes they're not noticed as easy as an overnight thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be an important instance, kind of politics and just the way we treat each other.
Yeah.
And it's too bad that obviously that there still are horrendous acts of injustice.
But absolutely.
Along with it, there are just so many cases of people doing the right thing to help other people.
People can be mean.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I believe most people are good people,
yeah,
but there
I do
it only takes a few to do something that takes a life or destroys property or you know, whatever it may be.
You know, Kent, I'll give you a case in point when I say that the in terms of talking about subtle changes in terms of values and so on, one of my essays I've written and subjects I teach is women's suffrage. And I'll have an essay question typically on that. And people are supposed to then, you know, they write about what was before and what come after. And I'll be reading a long discourse about how awful it was for women at a certain time and how unjust it was that they couldn't vote. And I'm wondering, well, is that Mary or is that Nancy? Who is it that's writing? And it's Bob or George. I mean, there are quite a few men that have really, you know, believe this stuff.
By the way,
strongly.
Women have a right to vote these days?
Yes, they do.
I'm just kidding.
Of course.
Yes. You know,
they even have a right to be vice president.
Yes, they do. They do. Yes. And really run for any office.
Sure.
Yeah. We've made some very positive strides. I think back to, I hear a lot of people talking. And this is just kind of the talk that goes on out there, not very often, but I hear it once in a while. Well, you know, our Constitution and so forth, when it was created, was racist because we only gave 3/5 to a black person. And all you've heard that 1,000 times,
yeah.
I know. The fact is, certain things had to be given to get it passed. And we look at it from today, why would anyone think of somebody as 3/5, but it is today compared to 250, 300 years ago too. And certain things had to be done in order to ratify a constitution and so forth. And so we've got to understand that. Now what can we do to continue to make things good?
Yeah.
As well.
And that's also, I'm a great believer in the miracle of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident,
yes,
that all men are created equal.
Yes.
They're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
And a man.
What a beautiful statement.
What a beautiful statement.
My
and
gosh.
The man who wrote it, of course, owned slaves.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of things that I like to get out there. And one is, when I talk about slavery, I talk about the fact that that was universal back in the day, that Africans owned slaves, Indians owned slaves, Asians owned slaves.
Right.
The miracle was not so much slavery as the movement away from it. And the way I like to put it is back in the day when we had classes where people were actually there, I'll walk up and down and I'll say, what we have with liberty is a walk. It's not stationary, but it's progress from a given point. And from the Declaration of Independence, if you look at American history as a whole, you've also got to include things like 500,000 Americans dying for freedom. I mean, for freeing other people. You don't see that happening
more than in any other
history.
War.
Yeah. And just in a variety of ways, it's terrible where we came from our own point of view. But we are moving.
But there is always hope on the horizon. I think that's what's classic about our country. I have a friend, and my tech staff's going to go, oh, no, he keeps telling the story, but I think it says a lot, who left at age 18 or 19, Iran, went over the mountains to Turkey to get to freedom, eventually to become a citizen in his family here in our country. And he reminds me, because I said last June, after some of the riots and so forth, you know, what's going on? And, you know, how can we turn a different direction? He said, Kent, you have to understand, our country, because he's a citizen now, we're about 250 years old. I come from a country that's 2,500 years old, and they still don't have it right.
Yeah.
Okay. And sometimes that's hard to swallow, because we all want it. We want things to be good today, if not today, tomorrow, for sure.
Yeah.
And so it's a path that we're doing. There's more history to be written as we move forward. You're working on a project with, you've done a lot of work with the Parks Department. Am I getting that correct?
You know, I teach a course on the history of national parks,
yes,
and it's not American national parks exclusively. Yes, Yellowstone, Yosemite, but I've traveled around the world making films and sometimes teaching my course from as far away as the deserts of Jordan and the center of Australia. You know, you can get on the internet and teach the class. And
yes,
I do a lot of, I'm a kind of an aspiring pro-am filmmaker. And I call them enhanced home movies.
Yeah.
But I can say to the students online, I can say, this is the way Yosemite Falls looked 2 hours ago.
Yes.
Or this is the way something in the in Britain looked 2 hours ago. It's incredible, the technology, the, between the a guy like me being able to make fairly usable home
yes.
movies and also being able to broadcast them through
yes.
to students a long way away.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that. And right now I'm working on a project I told you about the Yukon.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I'm not able to get up there because of restrictions on travel.
Right.
But I have 10 students at Eastern working on, we're actually going to write a book this during the next six or 8 weeks and publish it this summer.
Oh,
Called Yukon, Klondike Voices. And what we're doing is finding old newspaper articles, old diaries, old publications about, you know, people going in deep into the Yukon. And it's an incredible experience to be able to pull together 10 different minds and try to get us to work as one. Oh, no, this isn't good. This, but, oh, no, this is great. And then ideally it gets to the point where I start out, I always tell them, and if you're writing, start out with an outline.
Yes.
But then let the outline guide your sources. Don't go off half-cocked. But then when you get into the sources, let the outline, let the sources boss your outline about. So you keep kind of tweaking it back and forth. And they're getting into that. And so it's very much a unified group effort to put together this book on Klondike Voices.
Has it been hard with the not all being in a room at one time to do things? Or?
You know, it actually is working out remarkably well. Wow. We have 4-hour sessions once a week. So there's plenty of time to get deeply into things.
Right.
And there are 10 of us, which is a pretty good number.
And you get all 10 together?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, through Zoom.
Yes.
And so far it's gone perfectly.
Good.
Get 20 or 30, I'm not sure how you would do it. That would be just static lecture. But with 10, it can be genuine discussions and work out quite
well.
One
of the modern miracles of electronics, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
To do that, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're going to publish it this summer?
Yes.
So in September, you're going to come on and bring a couple of students and talk about it?
Sure.
Okay.
And free copies for everybody.
Yeah. Great. That's signed, I hope.
Of course.
Oh, all right. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to make sure you come.
Okay. Well.
Because personally, you know, I don't care if one person watches, but personally, I'll be excited to hear about the work of the students and so forth. I think the dynamics there and so forth. And I think will be kind of fun to do.
Well, Kent, to follow up quickly on that,
yes.
A few years ago, a group of students and I published a book called The Fair in the Falls, which is the big book about Expo 74.
Yes.
And it's the biggest, most thorough book about any American world fair since World War II. And, you know, I'm bragging, but I'm also bragging for my students. And the book is dedicated to about 18 of them. And I'd still be researching that thing if it weren't for the excellent research that they did, pulling in information on it. So.
Yeah. You came, we got something in common because you came to Spokane area 2 years before Expo.
Yeah.
And I came 2 years after. And I think I told you
we
before.
We bracketed it. You know.
Yeah. And actually, I had never heard of Spokane until a former boss of mine in Los Angeles took his family to Spokane for the World's Fair.
Great.
And then I never heard anything until we decided to move from LA to Spokane. And and of course, working at the chamber, I was the guy in charge of the big, all the projectors that were back screen. It showed on a screen from behind about Expo and the leading up to it and everything else. I learned the history. I knew within a week the full history and who the players were, and got to meet many of them who would come to the chamber office and so forth. What a deal that was.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, we're the second smallest city in the world ever to have had a World Fair. King Cole, who did ours, also did one in Oxford, which is slightly smaller. But I like to tell people that in terms of the results of a fair, they call it the residual, what's left when the fair leaves.
Yes.
Ours is probably as good as anything anywhere in the world, because the falls had been totally forgotten, and now there's this gorgeous park right in the middle of the city. And that's
and we just updated the park, the riverfront park,
beautifully
to keep it current.
Beautifully.
Yeah.
No, it was an amazing job for a small town to pull it off.
It really was. And it was at a time when many of them, most of them, business leaders and community leaders stepped up with their own pocketbooks and their company pocketbooks to fund it and get it done. And I think we're where we are today, take away COVID, because things have been a little strange the last year, but we are where we are with the revitalization of the Davenport and downtown and other areas. I was involved in Mirabeau Point out in Spokane Valley.
Great.
Okay, to be able to do those kinds of things.
Speaking of participation, do you have time for a brief expo story?
Yes, I do.
I'll try to keep it under 2 hours.
Okay, that's a good deal.
Okay, well, one of my favorite stories in terms of the participation and the engagement with Expo, in terms of people wanting to be part of it, was the fellow who ran the, it was the Ford Pavilion, and they had an Indian teepee in there. And they had the structure, but they didn't have any lodge poles, and lodge pole pines are what the Native Americans would have used. And he went out, and Ford gave him money to go out and buy some from a local ranch. And he saw this ranch and went up, and they had just the perfect pines there. And he went to the door and knocked, and this big rancher came out and sort of glared at him. What do you want? And he said, I'd like to buy some of your trees for Expo. It's going to be for teepee. And the guy said to him, I will not sell you any of these trees for Expo. He said, if this is for Expo, I'm going to give them to Expo.
Oh, nice.
And
nice.
That's just, you know, that's,
there was that spirit,
that sense of
it?
Community is is special.
Yeah.
It's priceless.
Yeah. It is priceless. It really is priceless. I want to ask about the Bill Young's Endowment Fund. Some folks were working with you to set up an endowment, which is, number one, a great honor, okay, to
Indeed.
Have one. It really is. It says so much about your history. We talk about history, but your history here at EWU. Tell me about that.
Well, back in the day, about 10 years ago, I was president of the faculty at Eastern, and a young woman named Alicia Kenny was head of the student body. And often those are two different silos, but we got to know each other, and I did things like having the students over along with faculty to events at my house, so we got to mingle. And so I got to know her better, and her fiance, now husband, Mike Clausen. And about a year ago, they took me aside in Seattle and said, Bill, we wanted to do something for Eastern and for you. And we've created, and they'd already done this, we've created something called the Bill Young's Endowment. And the thing about it, Kent, is these kids, I mean, they're probably 30 now.
Yeah.
These kids had just had twins.
Oh, boy.
And they put up $5,000 to start this endowment. Well, in the meantime, I tell people I had a brief cancer scare just before that. I came through it just fine. But kind of between that personal experience and my being so impressed with them, it's cost me a lot of money.
I love it. I love it.
Because I decided if they can do this, I better start. But at any rate, we've got this endowment going forward. And it has, one of the things will be a prize called the Clausen Young's Award for a student to do a project in environmental history at Eastern. And the other thing we're going to do is sponsor things like this. The Klondike book will be funded partly through that endowment.
Oh, nice. Good. Good. Wow. I could keep going on for hours, but I'm going to get you back in a couple months. Okay.
It's a deal.
Yeah. Because this is absolutely fascinating to me. thank you for all you've done for nearly 50 years at our campus out there. Do you teach downtown at all, or when classes are?
Yeah, occasionally I've taught downtown.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
mainly on campus
right,
at Cheney,
right,
though.
Right. Yeah. And I hear, isn't that going to be back open in the fall?
That's what we're hoping.
We're hoping, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of campuses come out, including WSU today came out, that they got to wear the mask to come back. You got to have the COVID shot to come back.
Yeah,
so
they're requiring the students to have it to come
which
back.
Which makes sense, because honestly, it's the younger folks who haven't wanted to do it. And,
well, and
they're often working in a class project or whatever very close together.
No, they need that proximity. We need
yes.
proximity with them, yeah.
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 So are you okay after a year of primarily working from home and so forth?
Yeah, I'm looking forward. Luckily a lot of the online classes have gone just fine.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to there are just certain things where it's nice to be.
Yeah.
Somebody says, hey, can I miss class Wednesday? My brother's getting married or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a slam dunk. Of course you can.
Yeah.
But it's fun to be able to just sort of look at him and
yes.
say, well, of course you can. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those kinds of personal.
Yeah. I've heard from a lot of friends who are so glad that they can now have coffee with a friend or sit down over lunch. And so, in fact, I've averaged, I think, 2 lunch meetings a week now because
oh,
a lot of people want to get together and so forth. And yes, the electronics are great. And all that. I don't want to take away from that. I learned about Zoom a year ago, January. I learned how to do Zoom. And I think it was March last year, even though my tech guys might say, well, we still have to set it up for you, Kent. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. So, yeah. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you
thank
so much,
Kent. Thank you for inspiring students to take a look at history and the importance of history. The good and the bad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's both,
yeah.
Okay? It's both. And we can all sit and debate what was good and what was bad. I think most of us know what was bad, okay? But let's work on making history now that is good for all of us.
Yeah.
And get that first line of we the people in the Declaration.
Yeah. Well, it's great to teach something you love and to make
yes.
contact with people who are enthusiastic about
yeah.
it. I'm a lucky person.
Yes. I have people say, well, what should I do on this job or that job? And I said, do what you really like to do. You only get one chance at this in mm-hmm. one lifetime, okay?
Yeah.
And have some fun. Thank you again for coming on Experts at EWU.
Okay, thank you, Kent.
All right.
My pleasure.
See you next time right here. Thanks.